har. Special welcome to you, Honorable Dudley. What we are going to do this morning, after we switch our phones off, or we put them on a mode that won't hear, we look at what we need to deal with this morning, not following the program. I will propose that we start with the briefing from legal services on the issue of MDDA, which is the last bullet point, members, on issues that we are going to discuss. If you have the agenda in front of you, you recall that there has been a problem of Mr. Ndendeni, who was appointed as MDDA member of the board, and immediately thereafter there was a problem. You'll also recall that last week we took a decision to re-advertise for board members of MDDA and ICASA, and we thought if the issue of Mr. Ndendeni is sorted before adverts go out, we must get a briefing from the legal services on it, on that matter, so that we are over and done with it. So I'll suggest to members that we start with that issue, so that other issues follow. The message that I get from the sector of the committee is that we have a revised presentation from DPME that came late last night, and it's now circulated to members. I was checking because we went through the presentation before the revised one. I was checking if there are no fundamental changes. And I was told that there are fundamental changes. So the new presentation has fundamental changes. We'll hear about those when we get there. I was just alerting you members that, that is the new one. We'll look at that when we get there. The other thing that we'll deal with when we follow our program, apart from the PME, it will be the adoption of the motion of desirability of the FPB and the adoption of the interim report on FPB amendment bill. And then at the end, we'll have to look at our program, at our report, the budget vote report. And when we get there, we'll have to be very thorough so that we adopt the report that we've gone through it thoroughly. So we'll have to rearrange our program for this morning in that fashion. Agreed? Agreed. We'll hand over to the legal services on the Ndendeni Mehta and Mr. Mjengana will present the light in complexion gentleman over there. Yeah, it's very close to yellow bone. So he will give us, he will present to us make a presentation on the issue of Mr. Ndende. Mr. Mjengane, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to yourself, Chair, and to honorable members and colleagues. Chair, our opinion, which has been provided, copies of which have been provided to members, is very short. It reduces to writing the oral advice we've given to Chairperson in this regard. The background, Chair, in brief, is that Mr. Ndenden was interviewed by the Portfolio Committee for a position on the MDDA board, subsequent to which the committee undertook a security screening process to find out if Mr. Ndenden had any grounds of disqualification for recommendation to the President for him to be appointed on the MDDA board. Several meetings between the chairperson of the committee and the security state security agency came with contradicting reports, and the last report before he was recommended was that he did not have a criminal record which would disqualify him to be appointed on the MDDA board. On that basis, then the committee recommended him, and he was subsequently appointed by the President onto the MDDA board. Subsequent to his appointment, Chair, a letter from the President came directed to the Speaker of the National Assembly indicating that it had turned out that Mr. Ndenden does in fact have a criminal record and is disqualified to be a member of the MDDA board. This subsequently led to an investigation to find out the grounds of this disqualification, and after some struggle, we eventually found information from the Department of Justice that indicates that he was in 1998 convicted of a culpable homicide charge, for which he was convicted and imprisoned, directly imprisoned, without an option of a fine, for a period of over 1 year. And this is the grounds for disqualification in the MDDA Act, set out in Section 5 of that Act, that if you have been convicted after the introduction of the interim constitution in 1993 for a criminal offense, for which you have been directly imprisoned without an option of a fine, for a period of 1 year, for over a period of 1 year, you would then be disqualified to be appointed on the MDDA board. We subsequently, in this letter, Chair, the President recommended that he must be removed by the National Assembly from the MDDA board. And the removal that is envisaged in the Act, Chair, to which President alluded to, is a removal for a member who had been properly appointed onto the board, who subsequently falls foul of the law, who must then be removed by the National Assembly. In the instance of Mr. Ndendeni, because he was disqualified from the onset to be appointed on the board, it would appear that Mr. Ndendeni then does not need to be removed from the MDDA board, as he never was a member in terms of the law or the applicable legislation. I made a courtesy telephone call to Mr. Ndendeni as we were investigating to find out the circumstances of his appointment. He indicated to me that he had never taken up the appointment to start with. And this, Chair, then leads us to a conclusion that, in fact, the MDDA board position that should have been filled by Mr. Ndenden was never filled in the first place, as he never took up that appointment. And secondly, because of the disqualification that is set out in Section 5 of the Act, Mr. Ndenden, in fact, was disqualified to be appointed as a member of the MDDA board. And therefore, that position remains vacant. In our conclusion, we therefore recommend to the committee that it might be prudent to advertise and fill up that position to assist the board to do its work. That, in a nutshell, is our legal opinion, Chair. Thank you.
Are you done?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yes, that's the advice we have, honourable members, on the matter. And surely if members agree with the advice, surely we must take a particular process to fill the vacancy that was never filled in the first place. But do we agree with that? Can I hear members, Honorable Kalako?
Yeah, I think, Chair, the advice from the legal side of Parliament, I think it's clear, Chair, we should be proceeding in filling the position as soon as possible, especially if he was right from the start, we were disqualified, and he have never in any case occupied the position himself. So to me, I think let's just continue with the filling of the position.
Honorable Fonda.
Thanks, Chair. I gave you a thumbs up, but I thought maybe just for record purposes, we agree with the legal opinion.
Thank you very much. Yeah, no, it's for record purposes. I think everything that we agree or discuss must go into the record. But I appreciate the thumbs up. Members, now that we agree and we accept the legal advice, we'll definitely go through the internal processes. Remember, there has been correspondence between Mr. Ndendene in the President's office and Parliament. And surely from the committee, it will have to go a particular route. Much as we agree that we'll advertise, but it will have to go through a particular route via the Speaker's office and all of that. But the committee takes a decision based on the advice that we proceed filling that vacancy that was never filled by Mr. Ndendene. I think the committee takes that view. Thank you very much, Mr. Mchengane. Unless there is something else.
No, thank you very much. I am done on my side.
Okay, no, we'll have to deal with other matters so that we are sure that the process is smooth. But we'll have to proceed filling that vacant post that was never filled. Thank you very much, Mr. Mchengane. You may be released if you want, but if you want, you may sit and listen to the deliberations. I think the PME is now ready to take us through, and first and foremost, I just need to be sure that we have the correct presentation and documents. This is what is circulated, members. Do we all have this document? Because once we miss the Honorable Dudley, do you have a copy? Can you give Ms. Honorable Dudley at the back there? So that's the document we are going to use, members. You have the original document, most that the report of the 2nd of December that was circulated last time. No? We'll have to proceed with the hard copies that we have, unless you want to wait for Biscop. You have your own computer, you can make a presentation, you will catch up when it comes back. Members, can you, why do I always look at you? Who's making a presentation? Is it not her? Otherwise, the presentation will be made by, as usual, by yourself, ma'am. Okay. We have the document. That thing will catch us if it comes back. Mr.
Mr. Rudy Dix.
Okay. Mr. That name. I didn't hear the name. He requested that he make some introductory remarks before the presentation. Go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. As I've indicated, Mr. Rudy Dix, I'm a Deputy Director General at the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and overall responsibility for the socioeconomic impact assessment. I thought first by starting, Honorable Chair, by apologizing for not being the last time over here. We generally try and keep commitments, but Ms. Kulani Kole is the Chief Directorate and we work fairly closely. Unfortunately, I had to attend three other portfolio committee meetings on this particular day to present performance for specific departments. Chair, when you had asked the question about is it fundamentally, so the straight answer I gave was yes, because I think we significantly changed the slides from slide 7 onwards. As you can see, we've kept the introductory part because that is important to provide an introductory part on the context. So what we've done is, in our interpretation of fundamentally, we think that there are, quite a bit of, having spent quite a bit of time looking at the various reports, the submissions made by different stakeholders externally, including our engagements with government departments, that we think that there are particular weaknesses that we have to admit and that we make a number of recommendations that, and unfortunately, we can't implement between the time that Pulani had presented the laws and between now. But we think that as a process going forward, we would suggest that perhaps is a way that we do support that. And lastly, Honorable Chair, before Pulani starts, is just to apologize that we've sent it late through. We had to make sure that we address some of those particular changes, and we do sincerely apologize. It's not our style, as you know. We are actually quite on time to send documents through, so that honourable members have it in good time to read and prepare for the discussion. Thank you.
Okay. Before the presentation is made, I was asking the secretary for the portfolio committee to check the legal services. Because we must have one of them here. What is the response? Anyway, we'll have to start because I really want one of the legal services people. That's the state law advisor. It's not the parliamentary legal services person. So we need legal services to be part of us as we proceed with the everything that is related to the amendment bill. Over to you, ma'am. Honourable Fonda.
Thanks, Chair. Before DPME presents, I just want to be clear about what it is that we have in front of us. So we got a report sent to us from DPME. Is this the final impact assessment, the report that we're given? This is your analysis as DPME of the legislation. So this is the document titled Socioeconomic Impact Assessment System Final Impact Assessment Template Phase 2 to December 2016 Films and Publications Amendment Bill 2015. Is that your final report?
Okay.
I'm going to follow up.
It's okay, so that before we start, we are very clear as to where we are going.
All right, thanks, Chair. Honourable Member, it's an ongoing process. The report that was submitted was of the 13th of December, and we noted in the previous meeting that there were also changes that were effected in the amendment bill. that still has to be actually tested against the socio-economic impact assessment. So the CF report actually runs parallel with changes that are effected in the bill, but also there were some other outstanding issues that we raised as CPME that we still have to work with DOC to improve. So it's an ongoing process in terms of assessing the bill as it actually changes along the way.
Thanks, Chair.
The last report that we have is 2nd December 2016, not 13. You are saying 13th December. But what we have is 2nd of December.
Okay. I mean, we circulated another report last week through Tembikosi. It was dated 13th of December. That was the last report that we received from DOC.
We have the 13th December, I mean, yes, 13th December document circulated last meeting. Members? Is that the second? Yeah, what we have is the 2nd of December. And I have that as well. Okay, it's clear that we don't have that report of the 13th, ma'am. Even in the last meeting, we had the 2nd of December report. Honourable Fonda and Honourable Fondek.
Thanks, Chair. The reason I'm asking this is what we have in front of us is not an impact assessment. It's a questionnaire. It looks like a questionnaire that was sent to DOC, where DOC filled in a couple of... The report that Tembikosi circulated in a second.
Yeah.
It's not actually any analysis by DPME of the bill as we requested. What this is, it looks like a questionnaire that was sent to the DOC. DOC filled it in and sent it to DPME. Now it's been given to us, from my reading of it, if I stand corrected. But, I mean, that's not what we ask from DPME. We ask DPME to critically analyze the legislation and give us critical analysis. What this is a questionnaire which we could have sent ourselves to DOC. We didn't require DPME to be a postbox for this. So I don't know if maybe the report of the 13th is the proper impact assessment, but this certainly isn't what we have in front of us.
Honorable Spandek.
Chair, I also just want to get clarity. As I understand, it is said that the impact assessment is running with the bill, but this impact assessment should have been done before and then went out for consultation. So there's some way, and then it must be published for the or input from the public. So this whole process is maybe they can just explain that also to us.
Legal services, I hear that they request to be released from the meeting. Is that the case, Mamungyama?
Apologies, Chairperson, for the interruptions. We were just concurring outside with Mr. Mjengwane if he can perhaps stand in for me with other processes of the committee that will go on, because I have to attend the select committee meeting on two plant bills as well, which they are processing as we speak, starting from now at 10. We just wanted to get an indication, hence we were asking the Secretary to check with the Chairperson whether that would be okay, or if Mr. Mjengwane is not necessarily needed for purposes of the other engagements, because he also has other litigation matters to quickly attend to. However, as we were indicating, we had discussed all the issues, and Advocate Quetta here next to me is well vested on all the other issues that perhaps the committee may have issues on, as well as on the processing of the next item that will probably come. So that is the position we have, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honourable Dudley.
Before Ms. Ngema does, if she goes, I was going to ask something obviously before the deliberations, but that she had actually said in terms of the PC needing to seek the approval of the NA to deal with new provisions proposed. So I just wanted some clarity around that, and I because it was actually words that she had said, I wondered if I could put it out there before she leaves. Thank you.
Do you want to clarify that again, ma'am? Mungema?
I'm not sure, Chairperson, I did pick up correctly the question, but in relation to the National Assembly Rule 2864C, where it basically makes a compulsory exercise that if the portfolio committee intends after deliberations or has picked up that there are other issues on the bill necessary to be amended, which were not part of the introduced bill, the only way to get into that and do it properly is for the committee to seek permission of the National Assembly. And that's basically what we had previously deliberated in the committee meetings, to indicate that for some of the proposals and deliberations that have taken place, that would basically be one process that the committee needs to engage in. Thank you, Chair.
Are you okay? This was explained last meeting. And I think members did understand. Okay, will you sit, Mr. Mjengwana?
I'm so required, Chair.
Hey, you know these lawyers. they want to be safe all the time when they respond. If I may, so required. Okay, but the question stands from Honorable Van Damme. It's very clear that we don't have the 13th December document. Never circulated. But the question is different from the document that I'm talking about. It's on the content of what is in the document of the 16th, of the 2nd. DDG, you want to
respond? Yes, absolutely. Pulani will explain that in actual fact there was an email sent on the 13th of December document, but perhaps Honorable Van Damme is not familiar with the socioeconomic impact assessment methodology. When we presented to this portfolio committee a few months ago, actually during last year, I was part of that discussion, Honorable Chair. We had gone on an exercise to explain the methodology in great detail to many portfolio committees, that the socioeconomic impact assessment system is a new methodology that has been adopted by government, and it replaces the old regulatory impact assessment system. Now, the regulatory impact assessment system, one of the weaknesses with the system is largely because it was designed for consultants at the first place. Secondly, it's complicated, unwieldy. It doesn't clearly make sense. In some degrees, it doesn't align to the national priorities. And of course, it doesn't take into account significant risks and how one mitigates those particular risks. The CS methodology, as adopted by Cabinet in 2015, was specifically to ensure that the methodologies that we have, So one of the problems, for example, Honorable Chair, is that the CS doesn't explicitly reject a particular set of policies or regulations that has been put before Cabinet. Unlike RIA, when you do a regulatory impact assessment, one of the weaknesses of the system was to say, in actual fact, this particular legislation that we want to implement is in line with the national priorities of government set out by the ruling party, for example, and therefore you want to implement it. Now, let's use, for example, an instance of the Labor Relations Act, which is always a controversial one, Honorable Chair. Many times when one does a cost-benefit analysis, it outweighs, for example, there's significant cost onto employers, there's cost onto society in relation to some of the major changes. And if one adopted the old methodology of saying regulatory impact assessment, you'd say that in actual fact, if one looks at some of the RIAs that were there, was to say reject the amendments. But in actual fact, the importance of developing those specific amendments, let's just use the LRA, was so crucial in terms of national priorities and giving rights to workers, for instance, as an example, that it's very difficult to say reject it. But the question and debate that is then therefore missing is how do we mitigate and address some of the concerns, risks, unintended consequences. So the CS methodology, in my first part, Honorable Chair, is that it's fundamentally different from the way we do regulatory impact assessments. It also avoids obfuscating, Honorable Van Damme, where we do RIAs and we do significant cost-benefit analysis and no one understands what it means. Right? So we developed a set of very simple processes of doing that. The first thing with the CS is to avoid consultants providing us 100-page reports that are quite dense and you don't quite understand what they're trying to say. Right? The second process is that we try and simplify the methodology, and that's exactly why we designed that particular template. So the template is not, and I'm afraid I don't agree with you that we don't do a post box. That's exactly that, right? We sit together with a particular department. The template is designed to reflect a thought-through process. So when you design, so the first phase of the template, when you're designing a particular policy, is to begin to say, okay, so what have the officials who are wanting to introduce that to the ministry and then present, of course, to the portfolio committee, thought about? Have you thought about, is this in line with the national priorities? Right? Have you thought about the cost? But not only the cost to government, right? The cost to society and different sectors of society. Because the cost may be different to small business than to big business. The cost may be different to those who are in rural areas and those who are in urban areas, Honorable Chair. Right? Have you looked at, if that's a particular cost, what are the mitigations? You know, how do we manage those risks, for instance? And then, you know, are they aligned to national priorities? And if there are particular disputes, how do we, you know, deal with the disputes so that it doesn't land up in a court where some sectors of society don't have the resources to take every single thing to court, but want a quick dispute resolution if there is a dispute in relation to what has been suggested, as in the case of the FPP amendment, right, Honorable Chair. So this is very, very important, but the design of it is not spelled out in the way we present the size, because operationally what we do is not give a template to a department and say, fill it in, you know. Part of that is to sit with them, take the officials through, ask those particular questions and complete the template. So the template in itself, the set of questionnaires, is designed to get people to think about it. Now, of course, the risk is that you get a lot of cut and paste, right? So they cut and paste and say, oh, okay, this is the problem that we're trying to fix. This is the behavioral change that we want to effect. And for us, it's an engagement strategy, and that's what we have. In the slides, Honorable Chair, you'll see that we've identified, because it's very, very important that we identify exactly the engagement sessions that we've had with the department in regard to this, is to identify with them on a step-for-step basis to ensure that they identify that, address that. But the critical thing is that if you do a CS report, it has to speak to the policy or the regulation that you're trying to do. Right? So we need to ensure that. So if you say, this is the risk that you've identified, and you say it's going to be addressed in the amendment, then is it addressed in the amendment? And so that's the central question that we want you know, the public and others to see. And of course, we can't, so we would say, for example, in this instance, you have not addressed this particular risk in your amendment, right? And the effect would be that you would have to address that particular risk. And so, of course, what we have over the last 18 months is exactly that. We just, you know, as happened on numerous occasions where I've been part of the executive discussion on a particular set of bills, and the question would be asked, there's a recommendation in the CS report, have you addressed this particular recommendation? And I think that's very, very important. But the nature and the methodology is something that is, although there's a sign of Honorable Chair, but the nature of the methodology is that it never ends. The process always continues. Because when we go, for example, as we recommend, to meet with other departments that are required for the successful implementation, we may have to change the CS report and then say, well, in actual fact, the CS report recommends that these issues have to be addressed. We may change it based on the comments that honorable members make over here, And therefore, we may have to say, okay, if the CS report changes and evolves, and therefore, if the CS report raises these issues, how does it affect the actual amendment itself, Honorable Chair? So I think it's very, very important to understand that it's not a I want to correct Honorable Van Damme, it's not a post-box approach. This is a methodology that we've designed, and it has been absolutely successful. Of course, let me, as the head of this particular process, admit up front that there are weaknesses. There are quality issues. So some CS reports are done exceptionally well, and we are praised for it because we have continued buying from a particular department. And there are other departments whose quality of the reports are really poor. You know, it becomes a tick box. And so that's the risk. We don't want a tick box. And while we spend such a lot of time and effort, it's a very labor-intensive process, Honorable Chair, where we actually sit for hours on end with a particular department and officials to ensure that it's not a tick box approach. So perhaps I just I want to clarify that, because we did present this the last time to the portfolio committee, but we're prepared to do that again and take through the presentation and provide some examples, because perhaps it would be useful to see other examples of how we've done CS reports that have been fairly useful for the executive and portfolio committees to be able to consider, even for the public to consider. In actual fact, right now, Honorable Chair, if I may express, a lot of our reports, what we're finding, is actually going also to NEDLAC, and so there's an engagement on it, and a lot of criticism are raised with some of the CS reports, but that's exactly the design of the methodology. Not to design 100-150 page reports, you know, obfuscate the process and confuse the public, and we don't quite know. Generally, and to be honest, in my closing remarks, is that when you come to a particular set of policy regulations or bills that you want to introduce or amendments, there are generally two or three things that are fundamental. And we need to point out those two or three things and say, if these are the risks, how do we address this risk? Thank you, Honorable Chair, but I thought it's important to explain that long process.
That's the explanation, Honorable Members and Honorable Van Damme. Honorable Van Dijk?
Chair, I just want to get clarity. Should the public or stakeholders not also have input in the CS?
Say that again?
The stakeholders, do they not also have input into the CS? Do they not also participate with this, or are they not included in the process? I just want to have clarity on that.
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Chair. Okay, responding to that, the CS methodology requires that a department should publicize their CS report when you are gazetting the bill for public comments. So this is one of the examples of the bill that actually escaped the whole process of CS. In terms of records, we understood that the bill was presented to Cabinet in August for introduction to Parliament, and the CS implementation came, the implementation date was 1st of October, so it already actually skipped some of the key processes that it would have actually went through. That is why also when we were doing CS, we could pick up that some of the consultations were not actually adequate. And probably maybe it's also a frustration to the portfolio committee, feeling that, you know, you are not moving. But it's some of the things that would have addressed if, like, you know, the whole bill was subjected to CS at the beginning. So those are some of the things that we are going to share during the presentation, maybe as a learning also to other bills that has to be processed by the portfolio committee. Thanks, Chair.
Was that 2015? Talking about? Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I take that explanation, and perhaps the weakness is in CS, but what we had requested was critical analysis from the DPME, which I'm not sure we have in the 2nd of December report. It is just a questionnaire that was filled in by DOC and sent to us. There is no critical analysis by DPME from the report that we have. That being said, I'd like to observe the report that's going to be presented and then give input afterwards.
Great. Can we receive the report and then members can reflect? Honourable Van Dijk, your question is responded to when she was explaining. Are you okay? Okay. Can we now receive a presentation?
Okay, thank you, Chair. The presentation will cover introduction and background, the application of SEERS, the process that we followed with DOC, and some of the key issues that emerge. I hope it will also answer, you know, some of the questions that have been raised by Honourable Van Dam, the actual analysis and critique from the whole process. I won't go through the introduction. My supervisor has already actually addressed it. But in terms of the application of SEERS, for example, the initial impact assessment is mainly research-oriented, and if you look at the work that has been done by the Films and Publication Board was an actual research in terms of the impact of media content of children in South Africa. So if they started the process with us at that time, we would have also maybe expanded the scope of research to look at also the legislative landscape. So, for example, the study was more focused on children and how they are being impacted, but would have also asked certain questions to say what are the existing legislations that kind of addressing the similar problem that you want to address. So, for example, it will be also assessment in terms of, you know, what social development is actually dealing with, your Children's Act, you know, definition of abuse that talks about, for example, defining abuse as exposing or subjecting a child to behavior that may harm the child and psychologically and emotionally. So the assessment was going to be with social development to say, what is the impact of this legislation? Have you, you know, what are the challenges that you are going through with regard to apprehending offences that relate to what is captured in the Children's Act? You know, engagement with Department of Justice, SAPS also, you know, the implication in terms of prosecuting and all those issues. But if you look at the study, it was solely limited, focusing on the impact on children. So initial impact assessment would have explored also different options of addressing the problem and also shape also the groups that has to be consulted in the society who are affected differently by the particular problem that has been identified in the study. And the final impact assessment was more when the bill has been drafted. There have been a lot of thoughts through process, consultation, and it will be more of a validation of the problem that would have been dealt with during the initial impact assessment. So in terms of the process followed, since last year we presented the SEERS to the PC. We had a lot of engagement with DOC as well as the board to go through the SEERS. And there were a lot of issues between ourselves. Whenever we identify a gap, we'll raise it with the department. So there have been a lot of engagement to and fro, us raising certain gaps and expecting also department to respond and improve on. And that whole process went on until December, where we issued a sign-off to say proceed, but there are other things that we still have to work with the department in terms of preparing for the implementation of the bill. So in terms of issues that come from SEERS and the whole bill and the preparation as well, some of the key issues, about 53% of households have at least one member who have access to internet, and highest way internet is accessed is through mobile phones. This is according to the General Household Survey by Status A for 2015. So it already tells you that there is an increase in terms of access to internet and therefore the increase to the risk as well. And about 80.8% of households are having televisions. And if you look at also the study by the board and UNISA that was done in May 2015, it actually indicates that Children are main decision makers of watching DVDs at home, and the enforcement in relation to the age restriction and classification guidelines by the FP are actually more stricter at cinemas. But at home, there are still challenges in terms of parental involvement and control. So imagine if you have 80.8% of households having televisions, but you have a problem of parental involvement and control at home. It already tells us there is a big problem that has to be dealt with over and above, you know, looking only at regulating the online content. And also some of the issues that emerged during the interviews that were conducted by UNISA and the board, it was showing that exposure to violent content and imitation actually prop some imitation behaviors from children. They want to do what they saw on TV, and some of the interviews were even saying other children were actually frightened or scared. So you can imagine, you know, how does it actually affect the development of a child. Some of the issues also that came from the study was that sexual content, violence and horror have the most observable impact on children between 7 to 17 years old. So some of the children were saying after we saw this kind of you know, content, we were embarrassed to talk to our parents, so we end up talking to some of our friends. So you can imagine, you know, the type of information that is shared among them without any parental guidance. And other issues were the limitation around the gaming, which is more popular to children, but you know, it's perceived the issues around gaming has to be explored further. So if you look at the Children's Amendment Act number 41 of 2007, it actually describes early childhood development as a process of emotional, cognitive, sensory, spiritual, moral, physical, social and communication development of children from birth to school-going age. So this is a very critical issue, that early childhood development is not only in the education line or the health line, but it involves all these aspects that one has actually discussed about. So the exposure to the harmful content can actually distort the above comprehensive aspects of childhood development, and it could also have adverse psychological and behavioral impacts on children. So if you look also in the NDP, the study on ECD actually provides evidence that delays in the cognitive and overall development before schooling can have long-lasting and costly consequences to children, families and society. So if you look at the environmental laws, for example, they are all talking about conservation, preservation of natural resources for current and future generation. But the issue is that are we really preserving enough in terms of human development for current and future generations? So for example, in Setswana, we always say lerojo le salimetsi, meaning a branch of a tree, you can actually tweak it, twist it or make it spiral while it's still, you know, wet, but when it's dry, it's difficult to deal with it. And also, and also from the Bible says, train a child in a way that when they grow, they will not depart. So, you know, different elements and recognizing other religions, probably there's also similar orientation or thoughts around the development of a child. And, okay, having considered the views of the Portfolio Committee, consultation on the implementation of the proposed amendment bill has been limited amongst government. So if you look at the CS report in terms of groups that have been consulted, key questions coming from the law enforcement agencies were raising issues to say, no, this bill is coming with kind of duplication, it must be aligned with the primary legislation. So it already tells you that there was some kind of limited consultation with the affected stakeholders. And there are likely to be overlaps, scope, script, non-alignment of the amendment bill in line with, like, for example, the sexual offences and related matters, Criminal Justice Act, your Children's Act, that requires some kind of, you know, working together with the custodian departments. So there's also insufficient consideration given on the cost and the likely risk of failure to those departments or institutions. So if you have not consulted with them at early stages, you need to work hard to have a buy-in and support. So it is also crucial to consider whether the amendment bill will pass the constitutional muster, if that's the question. Still on cost and regulatory efficiency, failing to fully understand the full cost of implementation is likely to lead to policy and regulatory failure. The UNISA study also makes a number of recommendations which is reflected in the amendment bill. For instance, more awareness and education of the guidelines. Departments that can positively contribute are basic education, telecommunication and postal services. In terms of, for example, the illiteracy campaigns, the social development, private sector, and also tighter police enforcement measures from SAPS and NPA. So if you look also how the costs have been articulated in the CS report, it also shows that there is limited consultation. For example, under basic education, there's an indication in the CS report that they will need to hire more teachers for educating children about online content and those issues. But it's just an assumption. I don't think it's actually coming from the department. Remember, the ICT is being rolled out in schools, so you can't actually hire separate teachers just to teach on online content. So it also shows that more engagement will be required, for example, with basic education. And therefore also it says to DOC that you don't need to come with a lot of cost on awareness while you have institutions and infrastructure that is existing that can assist and partner with you. In terms of regulatory burden issues, high compliance and implementation costs, ways of attracting compliance, streamlining and improving turnaround time for classification are some of the things to say. If we want affected or the industry to comply, we need to also internally improve our processes that will attract compliance in terms of the decision, turnaround time to make decisions, turnaround time to process, licensing and the like. And the issues of collaboration, as I indicated, can also assist to minimize education and awareness costs. But the other issue that we picked up in the study is that the department have started with another study to look at the appropriate tariff structures and fees. And from our view, that study would have been done actually prior to the development of this bill. Because at the end of the day, it creates uncertainty to the industry. They don't know how much will be determined from the study. So it was supposed to have been done before the amendment bill would have been finalized. In terms of managing risk, we admit that there is change coming from different aspects of environment, political, technology, socio-economic aspects which influence the need for us to do amendments. But we must admit that whenever you introduce change, you are bound to actually have some form of risks, and therefore we need a proactive mitigation strategies. Identified risk in the CS report relates to IT-related, poor public participation, fragmented approach, potential litigations and resources. So DOC needs to be clear on the institutional arrangement in government with clear functions, roles and responsibilities in line with the implementation of the bill, and to deal with also the potential risks that have been identified. Litigation costs can also be avoided by simplifying the dispute resolution mechanisms. I've seen also there are some costs that are already being saved for legal costs. But for us, investment has to be more in terms of the dispute settlement mechanism as well as further engagement with the industry. And the issue around monitor and evaluation, which actually helps to monitor the legislation, whether it's actually achieving the problems that have been identified, and if not, early interventions to address bottlenecks has to be addressed. So the bill considered the strengthening of compliance monitoring enforcement for the FPB, and again, this can only be effective if roles, responsibilities and costs are clearly identified and agreed amongst the parties. I must indicate, relating to the problem statement that we have identified, the statistics, that somehow the bill has a positive contribution to the national priorities. You're looking at social cohesion, security, regulatory and certainty, economic inclusion and the like. But however, it actually, as we indicated, more work has to be done for its implementation. So in conclusion and recommendation, the key issue, does the bill comply with the Constitution? And one of the things from our side is to say the loopholes that we have seen from DOC in terms of engagement, we'll also take upon ourselves to work with the department to actually deal with all the stakeholder issues and IGR related to map out an agreed process of assisting to complement the bill. So DPME to support DOC in convening a government stakeholder workshop to present the bill and the CS report, required to ensure that we address implementation challenges that are arising, develop adequate coordination strategy to achieve the objects of the bill, ensure roles, responsibilities and costs are identified and addressed, address external stakeholder concerns. Cost and uncertainty are immediately addressed in relation to the proposed fee and tariff structure. So this is the work that we are going to also facilitate with DOC. The bill must address the potential disproportionate effect. Is this likely to affect small players more than the big private sector players? Is it likely to affect local industry disproportionately to well-established and better-resourced international players? Further work is required to also understand the effect of gaming on children. So that's basically some of the key issues that came as we analyzed the whole process of the bill and the CS report. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. So there it is. It looks like we're a bit far listening to the presentation. We're a bit far in concluding the bill. That's my sense, I don't know. Members? Honorable Fanda?
Thanks, Chair. Much better. This is what we requested. We wanted to hear DPME's views. Much better. I'd still like to see the 13th of December view and read it for report and read it for myself, but this is much better. This is what we requested. I've just got a couple of questions. In terms of the regulatory burden, you mentioned high compliance and implementation costs. What are those anticipated costs? What's the amount that it will take to implement this bill? I think that's quite important given that the department, you know, says it does not have enough money and the country is under, you know, economic pressure. So how much will it take to implement this bill? What's the total amount? And then you also mentioned that you have concerns about the effect on small players in the industry. SMMEs are quite important for the economy. They create a lot of jobs. What is that anticipated effect on smaller players in the industry? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Van Dijk.
Chair, I see that UNISA was consulted, but I also want to know if there was made use of any other published studies, and if that was the only panel of advice that was used. And I also want to know if any technical analyses were made. And then I also, with regards to the cost of education, I just want to find out, it said, somewhere I read that it was said that new teachers might be necessary, but South Africa has a problem. There is not enough teachers as it is. So implementing wise, there's a lot of hurdles with regards to that. And also the minimizing implementation and compliance costs. The turnaround times, I want to know if administrative reviews and the costs of that, if there's any indication of that, because that's time and cost consuming. And I also want to know, I believe that the DOC will have to establish a new directorate, and also the cost involved with that. Was that the budget with regards to that? Where will that be accommodated? And also, as my colleague said, the cost with regards to this whole process, because, yeah.
Another, Honorable Dudley.
Thank you. The major concern was that there was particularly around the harmful consequences to children and adults and society at large in terms of exposure to pornography generally, and that on all those sectors. And there was a concern that it didn't obviously look like it had been addressed by the DPMA. In terms of you explaining the methodology, I see you coming from a different way. So it seems that there could be perhaps some reference to, there was reference to how it impacts children, but I think what people were asking for is that it impacts children when it impacts adults. So they were calling for that to be looked in as well, and I was just thinking in terms of the report, if there's reference not just to children, but the impact on children when it impacts adults. Thank you. And the other thing was the hate speech definition. It would be attempts to resolve the concerns around that were clear in the bill, but there was concern that it's now creating a conflict between two different things going on. So it leaves both the old broad definition and adds in the words which is prohibited in terms of Section 16(2) of the Constitution. It also adds a definition of harm broader than the dictionary definition, and the proposed new wording is legally meaningless and ambiguous. The concern is because of the two different things. The Constitution does not prohibit any speech. It just fails to protect certain categories of speech, and the bill now has two contradictory definitions and these concerns. And I just wondered if you've looked very closely at that and how you see that. Thank you.
Thank you. Another question? But I just want to hear you properly, ma'am, presenter. You were saying the bill will not meet the constitutional muster. I heard you saying so. I hope I'm right. But if you can explain, if you said so, just explain. Did you?
We were very careful to choose our words there, Honorable Chair, if I may on that. We're asking a question. Does the bill, you know, meet the constitutional muster? That's the question. And I think it's partly because in the week we've been looking at some of the submissions that have been made. And I must indicate there have been a few areas specifically raised by two submissions in relation to the constitutionality of it. Now, I think if the question is raised, it's not to put it under the table, it's to ask the question, so does it, right? And therefore, I think that requires a process that we most likely have to test and see what are those particular sections that we'd have to look at in relation to that. You know? So I thought perhaps just a response on that. It's asking the question. You know, and I think we need to put the question to the department and say, have you, is there, you know, what is your litmus test? And it's something that, Honorable Chair, that we want to introduce a bit more in the CS process. In actual fact, we're going to ask a tick box. So does this meet the constitutional requirements? You know, and how? How does it, you know? So it's a question that we're asking, and I think we need to put it back to the department.
Okay. All right, all right. That question is responded to. It's fine. There are three questions to you, TPME. Can you respond to that? And when I'm going to the bathroom, Honorable Kalako will just hold the phone.
Thanks, Chair. The questions around high compliance and implementation costs. If you look at the CS report, mainly the cost will be bet by DOC in terms of the establishment of the responsible directorate, which will be about 28 million, and also by the Films and Publication Board, 107 million. So the reason for the impact assessment question was more to say, if somebody looks at these figures, will say it's a very costly bill, given the financially constrained environment within government. But the issue was also to test, is it worthwhile? What is the value or the benefits as you invest so much money? But if you look at the report also, it's broken down into multi-year kind of phases. So there's still going to be another exercise where we have to unpack, the whole sequencing of activities around the implementation, but also speaking to also their licensing processes and their fee structures, but also to, as Rudy indicated, issues of constitutionality. How do we map out all these different legislation that are actually, supporting this bill in terms of process? You don't want issues where, for example, should there be an offence around this issue and, a victim becomes exposed to secondary victimisation because you are going from one agency to the other regarding your, the offence that has occurred. So it has to be really unpacked through our stakeholder engagement process-wise. How do, for example, children report when they are exposed to this kind of crime, and how is it being prosecuted? So you have also different legislation that are targeting women and children. They've got their, special judiciary system that takes. So we need to unpack the whole process in terms of, ensuring that all these efforts are being streamlined and supported. So one of the issues, for example, that have been omitted, there's a requirement that compliance monitors have to have access to premises, but it means they have to be accompanied by the SAPS in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, and those issues have to also be unpacked. So the fees that has to be paid by the industry has to also be explored within that study. So there will still be a lot of engagement beyond this process to actually practicalize what is being captured there and determine any loopholes or delays. And then with regard to the study that one indicated, it was UNISA and the board itself working on this. So it was both qualitative and quantitative, where they will also have questions to the children, their issues and the like. So the study that we received was only between the board and UNISA. And then there are also issues of cost of education. Yes, we understand that there are a lot of other requirements to support the quality basic education, issues of teachers. That is why we are saying actually there's no need to appoint teachers only to deal with this aspect. It can be through the teachers who are doing life orientation or those who are already appointed with the rollout of the ICT, since now kids are using a lot of technology at schools. So you don't have to separately appoint new people to deal with those issues. But also to explore other things, to say, as you said, Honorable Member, when parents are affected, the impact also goes to children. So one of the innovative ways is to say, can we use that platform when we have parents meeting? We have both kids and parents in the same room, convey the same message. So those are other innovative ways that needs to be explored. So those are some of the responses. I don't know if honourable members are covered. Thank you, Chair.
Are you okay, members? Honourable Funda?
I don't believe my questions were answered. The one about the cost and the impact on the small players in the industry.
Yeah, I think some of the questions, I would like to pose those questions to the department in particular, so that they clarify us on how are they going to implement this in the regards to those issues. I don't want to burden that much, even the question on the or whether it will meet the constitutional muster. The department will have to clarify us so that we're clear completely. I must say you did do, I want to concur with my colleague Pumzile when she said at least you did attend to what we requested you to do so that we can be able to move forward now and engage the department on those issues themselves. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Are you okay with that? Honourable Dudley?
Okay, I'm just, what I'm getting from this obviously is that there was a fairly surface attention made to that particular aspect that I'm talking about. So I think what I was saying was if there was any recognition of that concern, it would have showed up in the report as saying perhaps the department or there needs to be further sort of investigating that potential harm, potential risk. So I'm just thinking, because I didn't quite hear there that it was considered to the degree that it would be put in the report that it should be further investigated. That was pretty much kind of where I was going, because getting from you what your part is and what your part isn't, I'm thinking that's all we would really be asking was for some recognition that this is a potential risk harm and it needs further investigation. Thank you.
Didiche?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Absolutely. I think the behavioural change that we want from parents is fundamental, and I think that's something that you raise as an area that we need to look at. I guess one of the things is that it's focused on trying to fundamentally protect kids from harmful products and media-related products between those particular ages that we've identified, and perhaps there's not a sufficient emphasis on how we affect the behavioural changes on parents to be able to ensure that those changes happen in kids. Absolutely, and that's something that I think it would be important. Honourable Chair, we did indicate that. What our next step is in actual fact, is to convene a workshop, is to convene with DOC that kind of discussion with a number of departments and to highlight some of that. Honourable Van Damme, yes, I mean, I think that is, if you look at the CS report, there were some forms of quantification. What we don't have is the quantification from those departments that would be required to implement. So we have to have a discussion, and we think that would be important for us to convene that so that, at least that exercise is done. We don't know the quantification of the private sector, right? Except that you could easily determine the quantification as well in the recommendation that Pulani suggests, is that we shouldn't wait for a regulation to be developed after this particular bill on the tariff and fee structure. Right? What we're arguing for is let's have a parallel process to this. So when you introduce that, you create certainty. Because the one thing we know from doing this impact assessment, honourable members, is that if you're not clear on the cost up front for the private sector, it creates a significant amount of uncertainty of what they agreed to. You know? And so even saying, don't worry, we're going to consult you, we will listen to what you're saying, is just sometimes not sufficient enough. Right? So you have to give an indication. And of course, that quantification, I mean, what Pulani says in that is that we need to address the disproportionate effect that quantification may have. Right?
Because if you talk, for instance, of a DST, right, and you talk about someone else, you know, there's different costs and impacts. There's an institutional, you know, management arrangement, lots of costs, you know, significant amount of profit that may affect them, and they can bear the cost much easier to a smaller player that's trying to enter the market. So we know that there is a disproportional cost if you don't address that. And so I think that's very, very important that we try and get to the exercise. And so the recommendation is to ask DOC to commission the kind of work that is required to look at that particular cost that may impact on the. It's fairly easy for us to do it in government. Whether we have the money or not is a different thing, so we have to ask them whether it's covered in the budget or not, because I think it will be very difficult to negotiate those additional budget requirements, as you know, of course, because of the constrained environment. But they need to indicate where it is, you know. So if you expect additional policing and enforcement from the police, is it covered in the budget, right? If you expect teachers to be able to, as Polani had indicated, to deal with this in terms of, you know, and whatever they need to do, if you require more media work to be done and communication, is it covered in the budget, you know? And that's the critical thing. The key thing is that we need to move into, Honorable Van Damme, is to get a sense of what the broad impact would be if a type of fee structure is developed and a tariff structure is developed, and this is the impact that it may have. And then does it address disproportionality? Because that's fundamental, always the case. And that's why we ask the questions in the CS report, you know, how does this affect small business to large business? How does it affect someone in rural communities? How does it affect a worker to an employer? And how does it affect different income groups, right? Because it affects this household different to that household because they have particular resources. I suppose what honorable members are saying is that let's go back to DOC because we need to engage with them. And we think that kind of workshop where we identify those particular areas that you have mentioned and what we have mentioned is discussed in a great amount of detail, Honorable Chair. And if you allow that process to unfold, we are able to do that and perhaps summons us back again to provide you an update of how we address those particular concerns with DOC. I must say, we don't want to exclude ourselves, so the emphasis on the Galaka is that we did say always from the beginning, it's a partnership with the departments, right? It's not us saying and saying, hey, you did this thing wrong. We want to work on these things and support them as we go along, as we've done with other departments.
I think we have concluded discussions on the impact assessment, because indeed it's it. What we said to DPM is to make an assessment, impact assessment. And I think they have done that. Yeah, they have pointed to issues. I agree that now the following step will be the department. And all these questions will have to be put to the department. Your meeting with the department, I think the advisor is there of the minister. Your workshop, that's for you guys. It doesn't reside to us as the committee. It's your own arrangement. But the following step will be, after we've done other things, we'll have to engage the department, and I think the legal services in terms of those questions of constitution, together with the state law advisor and the department, all those legally equipped people will have to look at that, but the department will have to respond to this matters. Can we now break for tea and come back to do other things? But thank you very much to PME. Thank you, DDG, for the presentation, Polani. To Kokyo Samans, which is close. Yeah. Thank you very much. We'll come back after 10 minutes, meaning 10 past 11. Thanks.